Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you in part by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers located in the Sunset Junction area of Silver Lake. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated selection of spirits, and one of the most impressive collections of bitters anywhere. That's Barkeeper in Los Angeles. Check them out online at barkeepersilverlake.com, or better yet, just head on down to the store. On this episode, I am joined by Nathan Hazard, who has made a name around Los Angeles and beyond by curating bar menus and opening cocktail bars in such far-flung locales as Panama City, Panama, and Bogota, Colombia, as well as being one of the founders of the popular pop-up supper club, The Coconut Club. He also is a rum ambassador for The Real McCoy and has been written up in the LA Weekly as someone you should keep an eye on in regards to his work in the cocktail world. So sit down with us. Nathan and I are having a tiki drink at the Classic Tiki Tea, and you should join us.
All right, so I'm going to start this way. Tell everybody who you are. Like your whole name and what you do and everything. That's how we start.
My name is Nathan Samuel Valentine Hazard.
Ooh, I didn't know you had that many names.
I do have a few.
And you're Catholic. Not even Latin. Yeah, Catholic. The Catholic. I know, add Latin to it and I have maybe two more names than that. And you're affiliated, well, I know you because of the Coconut Club.
Yes.
Kind of. I think I forced myself on you in a very platonic way at a Coconut Club because I'd heard your name.
That is true.
And actually, your booze history is what?
My booze history, God, how to put this into a box? Well, what I currently do, I guess, start there, maybe move backwards.
Yeah.
Brand ambassador for the Real McCoy Rum. I am co-founder and beverage director of the Coconut Club, which is a tiki-inspired pop-up in Los Angeles. And I also do other creative events for hire and consultations.
On bar menus and such.
And bar, yeah, bar programs around the world.
Yes, that's right. I forgot for a half a second. We will talk about that.
Yeah.
So you do that stuff, but when I do these interviews, we always start talking about booze first, because it's easy. Easy to go down that path. However, with you, we're talking about music first. Because you and I kind of have a similar trajectory.
We do.
In that we were college kids who got into radio at that time.
Yep.
And that kind of shaped what we did with our lives for a while.
Absolutely.
I know, it's funny that we both kind of, I just laugh about that. Like, we were music nerds, and then we went to college, and then we found college radio. So, tell me about your college radio experience.
Oh, absolutely. So, I went to University of Oregon in Eugene, Oregon. I was super, envious of all the DJs at KWVA Eugene.
Wait, what is it? KWVA?
88.1 KWVA Eugene.
There you go. Mine was 90.7 KALX-FM.
There you
Berkeley,
go.
California. Our radio voices.
I just thought they were the coolest kids in town, of course. And it took me a couple of years to get up the gall to actually apply.
Yeah.
But then once I did, I got a show, of course, like some midnight show on Sunday or something ridiculous.
Yeah, that's totally how it works.
But, you know, I made the most of it and, you know, would ride my bike with my backpack full of CDs through the rain to the station and had the best time with it. And that kind of led me to go further with the music, and I started booking concerts for my campus.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so I was booking shows around campus and around town, really.
Did you get involved with a group to do that, or did you just kind of force yourself on, like, this space, a band could play here?
It was the best schooling that I got
in college
was this side job. It was a work study kind of a situation. An organization called the Cultural Forum that was in our student union that got a little tiny bit of campus money to put on shows. And so they had someone doing national art, like artists, someone doing regional, which is what I was, someone doing art, someone doing films, political speakers.
How
like
fun.
Yeah, we had like Annie Sprinkle come and like all this crazy stuff.
Oregon.
Yeah, Oregon. But yeah, so I booked concerts, and that ultimately those two things, the DJing and that booking gig, led me to work in the music industry in Los Angeles.
That's what happened with me as well. My degree had nothing to do with the job that I got, except to show that I went to college.
Right.
You know?
Arts.
Totally, right? What do we do with a liberal arts degree? Yeah. All of my experience came from working at the radio station, and then music journalism, because I was writing for like the local papers. And same, totally the same. And what was your station's focus? And ours was free format. So was yours anything goes?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was all over the place.
Yeah. So for our show, the way we used to phrase it was, if your grandmother can tell that you're playing three different genres of music, then you've fulfilled your requirements. Because we had to be diverse. We had to play three different genres.
Right. Well, and I'm sure this is maybe fairly common, but we had our couple of shelves that we had
the new stuff. Yeah,
yeah,
we had like
to do
four an hour.
Five from this shelf, three
totally.
From this shelf.
Yeah,
you know
that.
Yeah,
that too.
Which actually, I now looking back, I really appreciate because it really diversified my set more than I probably would have. Like
totally.
It got me playing like Deltron 3030.
Yeah.
Instead of just, you know,
just whatever NWA, because everybody
like,
knew NWA.
Yeah, Riot Girl. No, but I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it made me have a very, like, just genre diverse set.
Oh, yeah, and that was our thing, was your grandma had to be able to tell the genres. Because we had, especially during the 90s, when I was on, we had these electronica DJs, right? And they're like, oh, this is house, and this is happy house, and this is intelligent dance music. I'm like, oh my god. It's almost all the same, except that's a little faster than that, you know? And I liked electronica, so I could tell the difference, but my dad couldn't tell the difference, you know? But my dad could tell the difference if it was hip-hop versus electronic music, you know?
Right.
So they tried to train us to look at it that way. Like, make it different enough that you can tell.
I see.
So that was kind of how ours rolled.
That's cool.
So what kind of stuff were you booking?
For the booking?
For the show, yeah, when you were booking the show. Since it was regional.
It was regional.
Did regional mean just Oregon bands or Pacific Northwest?
You know what? It didn't really. It just kind of had smaller budget. And that didn't really stop me from bringing a New York artist or, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
But I did do a lot of smaller local artists who would come and do like daytime sets like on campus. And but then I'd also book, you know, Tracing the Plastics to come out and
ooh,
do like
fun.
Yeah, or
oh my
you know,
god, I forgot about that.
Yeah, you know, I did a lot of that kind of Northwesty Riot Girl, like awesome K Records, Go Rockstar stuff.
How
I mean,
fun.
I was there like at the crux of that scene, you know.
Oh, how fun.
So yeah, the gossip,
all that.
What
was like a favorite act that you booked that you got that got you really excited when you booked them? There had to have been at least one. Or maybe there was just one that you saw and afterwards you were like, that was so amazing, how did I make that happen?
No, I'm trying to, oh my god, it's been so long, I'm trying to even remember. It's like,
standout.
It's fairly hazy. Although we did, this wasn't mine, but we did actually, our organization brought Bob Dylan to campus.
Holy
which
crap,
was kind
seriously?
Of like, how did we pull that off?
Sometimes you just ask.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
I had Concrete Blonde play a benefit for me once. Like, it was early 2000s, so they were, you know, past their prime.
Yeah.
But still, I loved them so much, like in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And to have them, and it was for the AIDS Research Alliance. And when I just was like, you know what, I'm just going to ask. And I reached out and asked, would you guys be interested in doing this? And Johnette Napolitano wrote me back and said, fuck yeah, I'm in. What else do you need from me? And I was like, okay.
That's
so
awesome.
You never know. You never know.
I'm pretty proud of my first show I booked. It was, I had no idea what I was doing. But I ended up getting Calvin Johnson, Mira, and Dear Nora to
do
to all do a show together.
Wow.
And looking back now, I'm like, that was like a really cool like K-Records like show.
Yeah.
that would have totally skipped over Eugene, maybe. You know, like, I don't know. But it was super fun.
Oh, that's awesome. So that led you to the music industry.
It did.
And
I
then
mean,
you became...
I mean, it
you took, were doing A&R, right?
What's that?
Were you doing A&R?
I did. So when I landed in LA, I was doing music video work. A good friend of mine is a director, and she was doing music videos at the time for artists like Bright Eyes and Cake and CSS. And I was having a blast working on those shoots and doing costumes or assistant directing, whatever she needed. And I just had so much fun. So through some of those contacts in Los Angeles, you know, I met some label people and then ended up going in for an interview in marketing at Warner Brothers. And about 6 months after, I got the job, and about 6 months later, realized, like, oh no, I want to be doing A&R.
Yeah.
And somehow.
Yeah, because it's really hard.
Weaseled my way in. Because
it's hard to transition to A&R.
It's
in any area.
To get a desk in A&R.
Yeah, totally.
And it was a weird, it was my first time in my life where I got something that, like, was coveted, and I felt that.
Yeah.
Like, I had people glaring at me in the building, because, of course, internally, everyone applied for this opening.
Oh, yeah, oh, absolutely.
And
that's what I say.
People just glared at me for months, and I was like, okay, you know what? It's not my fault. My taste is better than yours. I'm smiling right now. You can't see it, but I'm smiling.
He's totally smiling. I'm blowing out the microphone. He's totally smiling. But I know from my experience in the industry, and I worked in licensing, so it was a totally different side.
Right.
A&R is too competitive for me to want to be into. But there was an area within licensing that was kind of like the A&R world. It was where they pitched. You know, it was pitching to the supervisors and such.
Right.
And so music licensing, you know, for those who don't know, I think everyone pretty much gets an idea what A&R is, because that's when you're like finding them, you're finding the artists, you're great making it happen. And then licensing, we're the ones that write the, yes, you can use this song in this movie and all of that. But it seemed like it would be so fun to do the pitching side and just to pitch our awesome catalog. And I also worked for Warner Brothers. I worked for Warner Chappell, which is part of it too. So that's, again, how we're I know, how we keep following this trajectory. And anyone, whenever there was an opening in that area, I swear, everybody applied for it. I never did because I knew I wasn't going to stay there forever. And I was kind of like, you know, I don't want to fight my way in and then leave in a year. I just knew I wasn't going to, I think I was there maybe just 4 years, maybe. I knew I wasn't going to, I wasn't going to be a lifer. So I wasn't going to, because if I had tried, I'm sure I would have had a good chance. Because all those guys knew me, we talked about it all the time. And I'm a music nerd on a different level than some of the other people, as you are.
Same. Yeah,
you
no, I don't actually fit the A&R mold at all.
No.
And that was always a challenge for me. A lot of people like to also challenge each other with their historical knowledge and who, the who's who. And I kind of refused to play that game because I was like, no, like, because you're only going to be asking me within your own wheelhouse. And if I asked you in mine, you wouldn't know the answers either. Do we really need to start that?
Like, I know. It's like a whip out your dick contest.
I was just going to say that. I didn't know if I was allowed to.
Yeah, you can totally say whatever. There's swearing. There's everything. And what's weird is I experienced that in some ways, but because I was a girl.
Yeah, man. The years at Warner, I mean, I'm not someone who gets starstruck easily, but I mean...
Who starstruck you in a big way? Come on.
I mean,
yeah, I knew at least one.
Well, I did get to be Prince's handler one day.
Who, Prince's? Oh, Prince. Shut up!
So I had
really?
To... I had to collect him at his car outside and walk him through the building up to our president's office.
Did he allow you to make eye contact with him?
He made eye contact. He took my hand.
Oh!
I got to look into his eyes. Yeah.
Yeah, well, because...
For a quick moment.
Yeah, because...
Before I looked away quickly.
We had his publishing.
Yeah.
And I remember the stories were, if you go to Paisley Park and the purple light is on, that means he's in the building, and do not make
eye contact
with him.
Yeah. I think you need to make sure he could trust me, since I was the one
handling him for the day. Other than that, I heard he was a very sweet person.
Oh yeah, I mean, my interaction with him was about as quick as rushing into Courtney Love in the stairwell. But I think my favorite was definitely crying with Stevie Nicks, because that happened.
Wait, you guys cried together?
Well, me and about 12 other people.
Well, did she sing a song and it made you cry?
She did a playback of her whole new album at the time, and she sang along with every track and told a 20-minute story in between each one.
Oh my god.
And then showed a video that she wasn't allowed to share of Soldier's Angel, her song, to cut to her visiting all the soldiers in the VA hospital where she volunteered.
Oh, wow.
And they actually don't allow you to show photos or video of what's going on in the VA hospital, but she said, since I'm not releasing it, I'm just showing you guys, I want to share this with you. It means a lot to me.
Aww.
And one by one, people just started bawling.
Just bawling.
And by the end, she was grabbing all of our shoulders and we were all crying together. It was, I literally went back to my desk, crawled underneath it into a fetal position where I stayed for about half an hour.
I shouldn't be laughing, but that's
no,
amazing.
No, it was
unreal. You were completely emotionally.
That was my that was the high point of my music career.
I am a soldier's angel 4 years later. In a war of words between worlds. About what is wrong, about what is righteous. I am a soldier's girl.
So during that time, you were signing artists, yes?
Yeah, so I was an A&R. A lot of what I ended up doing, though, was taking on existing acts who were homeless. So I was caring for bands.
So existing acts that were homeless, what does that mean exactly?
So these are bands that were signed to the label, but their old A&R people had moved on.
So you're kind of babysitting
them. Right,
yeah.
So a big part of what I did.
Handling the orphanage.
I loved my orphanage, though, because
yeah.
I had, you know, the Flaming Lips. I had Built to Spill.
Yeah.
You know, Jenny Lewis and Rilo Kiley's projects. Like, I acquired some really cool stuff right off the bat. As well as, yeah, I mean, going, went after a lot of stuff over the years. You know, co-A&R'd a Devo record, which was super fun.
Oh, wow. That's kind of wild.
Yeah, I helped sign some cool stuff like Iron and Wine and The Cribs, Star Death and White Dwarfs. It was a good time. I really enjoyed too some of the pre-production A&R stuff, which is that kind of creative songwriting side where you're helping link people up either with writers or with producers, engineers, and helping them form the songs. And you know, Tegan and Sarah's breakout record, I was working on that on kind of the front end of. It's a really rewarding line of work when
it's going
when well. You're focused on the work.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's one that has a lot of politics and whatnot around.
Like a lot of jobs, but when you're in the entertainment industry, there are lots of egos to juggle and.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bigness around it, big personalities, a lot of people who need to be seen and heard and all of that and everything. So you left the music industry, and you and I have both made this comment too, because I am actually, as of this year, no longer in the music industry either, really. And I remember you saying, well, since I left, I've never had reason to look back. And so you left because, well, I'm sure it was a combination of things, but the lure of the booze was strong.
Well, that,
I mean, was it cocktailing that pulled you away?
Kind of. I mean, the whole time I was at Warner Brothers, I was developing kind of a side interest, which was kind of that golden era of food blogging.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I started a blog.
This is like in the mid to late 2000s.
Yeah. Late 2000s. I started a blog called The Chocolate of Meats.
The Chocolate of Meats?
The Chocolate of Meats. And it was all about
what
just...
What is the chocolate meat?
It was prosciutto.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
But the idea is using that as just a simile for... Simile? Metaphor simile?
Metaphor.
For just the cream of the crop. The best stuff.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I kind of did new restaurant reviews. I did cocktail recipes. I was all over the place. It was kind of lifestyle oriented.
Yeah.
But that led me to do an entertaining podcast about entertaining, rather, for a number of years with some other food world peeps on a network called Home Fries. That was really cool. And that kind of made me excited about different kinds of food media or different ways of doing things.
And were you still at Warner Brothers when you were doing
this
too?
This was all still at Warner, yeah.
Yeah, so these were your extracurricular activities at the time.
But through that podcast, one of the co-hosts and myself started doing private events. So people were like, we love your ideas, would you do a party for us? And, you know, we were the party guys on this show, so it was like, well, yeah, why not? Why can't we be the party guys in real life? And started throwing creative, interesting parties for people. And that kind of started becoming something more around the time that I got laid off from Warner Brothers. I started managing bands after that for a few years, which was super fun. Let me travel. It was a little more flexible.
Yeah.
But it just started dwindling, and I think I realized it wasn't really where my passion was lying, and I noticed that I was more excited about, you know, doing a really kooky, creative, private dinner party for TJ Miller and than, you know, what I was doing at my desk. So there was a pretty slow and somewhat seamless transition that happened between the two over the course of a couple of years. And yeah, nowadays I'm full on cocktails and entertaining and booze and all the good stuff.
And now you can just enjoy music for music.
It's kind of wild.
It's kind of nice, right?
I've been going to a lot of shows lately, actually, and running into old, you know, coworkers and colleagues. And it's so funny because they still have that kind of, not anxiety, but like this energy of I'm working right now. And I'm kind of like, you know,
I'm just chilling, watching
just
the band.
Just chilling with like a cider, like watching a band, you know. And they're like,
just like college.
And I think they kind of expect me to be on that level still. And I keep looking at him and kind of shaking my head, like, nobody, you're on your own. I'm just chilling.
So was the Coconut Club the first thing that kind of, well, I guess, what really put you on the map? Because people know Nathan Hazard. Plus, you've got the name Nathan Hazard. So, I mean...
Yeah, it's all the name.
It's all the name. But, I mean, it was kind of... you. Obviously, you were doing these parties, so your name was getting around certain circles and everything. And then,
you know, I think it's fair to say, though, that Coconut Club is what...
The Coconut Club took it to a different level.
It did take it to a different level. I think, you know, we started doing this silly idea, not really knowing if anything would come of it, and pretty quickly led to some really kind of compelling press, which we weren't even really ready for in a way. I think in a way that's what pushed us to take Coconut Club a little more seriously, because we had to, because people were coming and press was writing about it and tickets were selling out, so we kind of had to focus on
it.
You
know, Los Angeles, it loves an exclusive. So if you've got something that there are only limited tickets to this and it only happens when it happens, LA wants it.
And it also was, you know, as you know well, it was kind of good timing with a moment that Tiki was happening, you know?
I was just about to say, it's kind of, that was the other thing, is, now when did Coconut Club, when was the first Coconut Club event, do you remember?
It was 4 years ago.
So it's 2018 now.
Yeah, it was.
That would only be 2014, it was before that. Was it just 2013? Maybe end of 2013 or something?
It was a summer. It was either summer of 2013.
Summer 2013, because I was living in Northern California when I moved back in 2014 to Los Angeles. You guys were already something I'd heard of. The first time I went to Coconut Club was in October of 2014, and I was well aware of you at that point.
Well.
So I'm going to guess you guys were before 2014.
I'm the worst.
I wasn't well aware of you personally, just the Coconut Club. Somehow your name started bouncing around, and in my head I was like, I need to meet this Nathan Hazard, and I didn't know why. But it was because we had the trajectory.
And I loved it. I went to Sunny's Hideaway on a Tiki Tuesday, and you approached me and said, are you Nathan Hazard? And
no, said, that was at Sunny's.
It was at Sunny's.
It was at Sunny's.
Yeah.
You were pouring the little pea, butterfly pea, whatever, cups. Someone's smoking weed outside.
I know,
we're
I was
at the
like,
Tiki Tea and someone's smoking weed outside.
I was like, skunk roadkill or weed?
But I remember going there with my then boyfriend, also named Nathan, and we were walked up the bar, and you were at the end of the bar pouring the cups.
Yes.
And I remember saying to you, "Are you Nathan Hazard?"
Yes.
And you're like, "Yes, I am." And I'm like, "I've heard of you," or something like that. And then probably you going like, "Great, crazy girl." And then we sat down and had our Coconut Club night. But I'd been there a couple times before that, I think. But your name had bounced around, and probably one of the reasons it stuck in my head was because my boyfriend's name was also Nathan.
Right.
So it bounced around. And I'd say, "Oh, I'm dating Nathan." They'd say, "Hazard?" I'm like, "No. Who is this Nathan Hazard?"
No.
But so Coconut Club, let's say late 2013, early 2014.
Sure.
Somewhere around there.
It's official.
It's so we got a Wikipedia. Someone has written a lie up on Google.
Oh, I got it.
So you started doing that, but you guys got noticed right away. And at that time, as you were just saying, the tiki thing was really starting to hit the stride that it's been in for a couple of years. So I think that was part of the... I don't even know. It's like the tiki thing was really... People were becoming more aware of it, but I really feel like in 2004 to 2015, it gained major acceptance.
I feel like even at the time, I felt like tiki was already kind of saturated. And it's so insane to see how far it's gone.
Yeah, like, I'm surprised, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm surprised as we sit in tiki tea.
Yeah.
But this place has been here since 1960.
Yeah, it'll stay. Tiki tea is always the same, and it will always be the same.
It will be the same. But yeah, I do see that as well, and I'm amazed that it's still going in some capacity.
Right?
And you know, I think part of it is we live in LA, which is a place where things come and go. So we're used to something being a fad for a couple years and then going away. But in many other places...
I think it would be very appropriate, though, for tiki to stay golden here for all time because it's where it came from.
It's where it came from. It's where it came from, and it can be sustained here.
Hometown pride.
Right?
It's like the Dodgers.
I know. I'm throwing my W sign through it. West Side.
They should really do a Dodgers hat, but with the two T's.
T-E-T.
You heard it here first. I want 10%.
You saw the Make Tiki Great Again caps they were selling?
Oh, I have it.
You got one of those
too. I wore it that whole summer.
When I was in London this summer, I went to Trailer Happiness, which is a London Notting Hill tiki bar, and the guy behind the bar was wearing a Make Tiki Great Again cap when I got there. And I was like, I just walked in, and hometown represent in London. Hello. So you did Coconut Club, and
yes,
you created all kinds of wonderful drinks there. And this led you, you did the parties before, but you also have your own sort of boutique consulting company as well.
Yeah. As I mentioned, I did some really cool projects with my Coconut Club and podcast cohort, Andy. But then I also kind of started a new chapter last year with a collaborator and friend of mine, Melina Bickford. And we started a company called Drink Special. And I think the idea was just to have an entity that could be the go-to for, you know, all of those, like, funny, events, catering, consultation requests that one in this biz can get from time to time. Just to kind of streamline it, make it a little easier, and to have someone I can kind of do it with in case I'm too busy or she's too busy.
Plus, we're in LA, so there are probably all kinds of wacky requests that come across your desk.
There have been some wacky ones, sure. I mean, still, my favorite event I've ever done was with Andy, and speaking of TJ Miller, we did his wedding reception after party in Denver.
Oh, wow.
In a clock tower in downtown Denver, up inside of the clock face, which is illuminated on all sides.
Wow.
So it kind of, you felt like you were in like a climactic scene
from Hugo, or what was that?
Yeah.
Is that what it was called?
It was,
you know,
Hugo.
What I'm talking about,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Or isn't there like a Hitchcock? Or
you're thinking of Vertigo.
Yeah. I mean, it was just surreal. I mean, you're inside of this illuminated clock face on all four sides. It's only, I think, 200 square feet per floor. And so it was spread out over five floors.
The reception
floors.
Was?
Yes.
They were
like overlooking kind of too.
Yeah,
some of the
floors. So it was like looking down the stairwells.
So you're kind of looking down. I mean, it was kind of Escher-esque in a way.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then on top of that, they wanted Alice in Wonderland meets kind of like Magritte kind of whatever.
Oh my God.
So when people came up the elevator, the doors opened, and we had built a wall of doors. So there's a giant wall with like green and blue doors, mismatched in different sizes, and inside each one was a little consumable. An eat me or a drink me, if you will.
Okay.
And they were like these little dioramas with a little bottle or a little bite that looked like a mushroom that was something else. And, you know, it was very fun. Of course, we had a little green apple, like a Madrid cocktail. We had a bride and groom cocktail. The bride goes by Rose Petal Pistol, so it was a little water pistol with like a smoky mezcal rye,
nice.
Kind of an old-fashioned. So yeah, it was just really, really fun, over the top.
And it keeps you creative too, I'm sure.
Right, and doing drink special has kind of extended that. So we're keeping ourselves on our toes by doing little bar takeovers or pop-ups every other month or so.
Yeah.
So
there's that.
It's a fun outlet.
So you're also the rep for The Real McCoy. You're the brand ambassador for The Real McCoy out here. I don't know what territories. Are you like the Southwest right now or something like
that? Yeah, I'm Southern California for now, and that sounds like it's expanding.
We'll see how that goes, because The Real McCoy is expanding itself.
It is.
So then my question for you is rum your spirit of choice? Or do you love all rums?
I do.
You love all spirits, and you just have to work in rum, you know?
I love all spirits, and I think I also work at Barkeeper at Silver Lake once a week, just to kind of keep me on my toes in that way. I love gin so much. I love Amari. I think Amari is one of my absolute favorite categories.
Yeah.
And I love mezcal. Like, I like so much. And
yeah.
I'm even a huge fan of like the obscure liqueurs, you know? It's
like weird ones.
Weird,
like to play with them.
Floral and fruit liqueurs. Like, I love all that dumb stuff. Like all the sticky and sweet. Give me them stickies and sweets. I love them.
Well, if you're sitting at home by yourself just sipping on something, does that change every time, or is there what's your go-to?
It does change. Yeah. I don't sip the same thing every night. Yeah, it does. I do drink a lot of neat rum at home, but I also make a lot of martinis. Gin martinis.
Oh.
Vermouth is probably one of my favorite categories.
Really?
That is completely overlooked.
Well, vermouth is something that I always have to throw out because I won't realize that someone has opened it and I didn't put it in the fridge.
Oh my God. Please, if you're listening, keep your vermouth in the fridge and throw it out after a couple months.
Totally. It's got to go. Oh, it's got to go.
It is wine, people.
Yeah, it's wine. It's fortified wine. So then I guess maybe this will work out since the spirit of choice may change with the weather. But I always ask, what do you listen to when you're drinking this?
Ooh.
See?
Yeah.
You like pairings. You do food and drink pairings.
Oh,
so now let's do some music and drink pairings.
Oh, boy. Okay.
You could do a whole menu around this if you wanted to one day.
How?
Not like you haven't thought about it before, because you're a music nerd.
That's true, but I'm trying to think what is coming to mind.
I know, right?
I mean,
it's that quiz show aspect. I just made your mind go blank by asking you a question. So
oh, for sure.
If you're drinking whiskey, you want to be listening to. If you're drinking gin, when you drink your martinis.
If I'm drinking whiskey, I'm gonna be drinking it neat, and I want like some like early Slater Kinney, you know.
Yeah.
Like I want to go back to the days when I kind of was drinking from a bottle when I was young, and that's like I was going to gossip shows.
Right.
Let's say early gossip with neat whiskey.
This early gossip one's really bluesy and screamy.
Super bluesy.
Super bluesy and like a minute and a half long,
yes.
Dark.
Yes.
I love that.
Driving,
early gossip.
Powerful,
yeah.
Sweaty.
Yeah.
Sweat is so important.
With early gossip.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So sweaty.
I was so in love with them.
Oh,
study whiskey and gossip.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, that sounds good.
So yeah. What about your martinis? Do martinis just go with everything?
Ooh.
It's like my friend Marlo was telling us on one of these earlier podcasts, champagne and everything.
Well, so actually that's a rule of mine too.
Champagne goes with everything?
Champagne goes with everything. So when I was young, it was all about the champagne. So we'll say champagne and Morrissey. Because...
Oh, look at that. Champagne and Morrissey.
Because I kind of was a young... Morrissey obsessed developing person.
It's, you were meant to be in Los Angeles.
And I drank. I was, yeah.
Because Los Angeles is obsessed with Morrissey.
Right. This was like Tucson, growing up in Tucson, being a greaser, and then going to college and finding myself. Morrissey stayed present through it all. He held my hand. Again, early Morrissey.
Early
because
Morrissey.
This was before things got weird.
When he was wearing band-aids on his nipples, Morrissey?
Yes, yeah.
Yep.
God, what band was it that did that song? Band-aids on my nipples because I feel like Morrissey.
Oh my God, I don't know.
Oh yeah, I feel like Morrissey. Every day's like Sunday. You know what I'm talking about? It was a band.
But we gotta find that.
We'll do it for the outro music.
Yeah, totally. But the time I do this, we'll figure out what it is.
So yeah, champagne was like the first thing I would like drink regularly at parties.
Really?
I was going to parties.
You were so fancy. I was drinking Jose Cuervo.
Yeah, let's be honest. It was probably like Andre. You know, screw top, whatever.
That's
but
true.
I loved just having a
bottle
of
champagne. But to this day,
champagne
goes with everything?
Yeah. Was that convincing?
A sparkling wine goes with everything. Well, now you can make spritzes. You can do sparkling wine with an Amaro or something,
right? Oh, yes.
I know you're a fan of that.
Many a spritz. Let's see. Martinis, though. I'm stuck on this.
I know. If martinis are the things you like making most, is that just what you chill to? Maybe you don't have music. Maybe that's when you have
wine. No. Martini would be like vinyl. It would be, Oh my gosh, what is my favorite vinyl record to put on them?
Do you like them? Sitting, we need to call your cat and ask.
Yeah.
She answered the phone and be like, it's this record, Nathan.
I mean, okay, I'm gonna have to think on that.
Okay, we'll come back to it.
We're gonna come back to
martinis.
But then we should probably talk about rum.
Let's talk about rum because rum is where you live. Rum is kind of the identity that you have, I think, in the cocktail world.
Right.
Which is why it's great that you, with your drink special, that you can express all these other things too.
Right, exactly.
You know, you've been able to do that and get out of the rum rut, but you do love the rum.
I do love it.
People, we don't want everyone assuming that all you're about is rum. Now, I actually am a tequila girl first and foremost.
Yes, you are.
Tequila
and I know this about you.
You know this about me. But I get teased a lot by people who say, well, for a tequila girl, you sure hang out in a lot of rum bars. I'm like, no, I go to tiki bars. That's different. I can still get tequila in those tiki bars. But, and I actually am part of the Whiskey Society downtown. So
yeah.
I go to whiskey tastings all the time. Tequila is not getting enough love for me right now, except for when I sit at home, right? But tequila is my first and foremost. So
tequila's first.
Tequila and mezcal are first in my world.
What about between tequila and mezcal? I mean, like, I know technically.
Okay, so my ordering, if you're going to ask my order of preference, I go tequila, then whiskey, then rum.
Okay.
I like the browns.
Yes.
And then I go, I'm kind of brownish myself. I guess it's nature.
Yeah,
but then I go into the gins.
Yeah.
And then vodka I don't even think about.
Which, what's that?
But why do I not think about vodka?
No, what is vodka? Just kidding.
What is...
I actually, for a point in time earlier, end of last year, people thought that I had given up rum for vodka.
What? That's a vicious rumor. Who started that?
Because I just did some event work with our vodka in downtown Los Angeles, and there was some social media of me at their space shaking up a cocktail, and people started panicking. What are you doing? You're working in vodka now?
Yeah. It's like you went to the dark side or something.
It was pretty funny. People got upset.
But let's talk about you and rum.
Well, so I'm thinking about the music still, and I guess for me, so I had a really amazing experience last year where I helped open a rum bar in Panama. Panama City, Panama, in Casco Viejo, the old town. So much so many ghosts, so many good vibes. And this is a beautiful, beautiful rum bar. Lots of rattan, very classic, you know, just gorgeous.
Yeah.
French doors that open straight to, like, the brick street. And one of the distillers of the brand. They both distill the rum and own the bar. The distiller, he is a big salsa man. So all of the bar is full of salsa records and a record player. And when we opened it, it was all monsoony and stormy and crazy and tropical. And something about being in, sitting in this like rattan chair in a sticky hot rum bar, listening to salsa records. It may be a cliche, but god damn, it's
it
a good
perfect.
One. And it's
like
perfect. And I don't want to live anywhere else but in that feeling.
In that moment.
That feeling.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's like, that is like the ultimate rum moment for me. That's not to say that rum isn't versatile.
No, it's true. But I mean, I had magical rum moments when I was in Havana, Cuba, like sitting in this little cafe behind the apartment where I was staying. And I walked in there the first day we'd arrived and was immediately hit on by the guy working behind the bar.
Perfect.
And his name was Marlon, as in Brando.
As we're spitting out my crazy thing.
And he was, oh, you are so beautiful. You will come back and see me again. He was like 12 to my 50, right? You know, so I'm like, yeah, I'll come see you again. I'm on vacation, yo. So I went back there every day because it was always downtime. And I went back in there because I sat there with him and was talking to him about what rums, there are all these rums I can't drink in the United States that I can have here. So I want to try some of it and I'll have a sandwich while I'm at it. Okay. And by like the third day, the owner of the place joined us. So I would sit with these two, and that guy's, so there was Marlon, and that guy's name was, it was like Benji or something. And well, how is Benji a Cuban name? Yeah. And so I sat with the two of them, and they would give me shots of rum. This is like a blend of this. Here's this. I'd have a shot of rum. It'd be pouring down rain because it was October, so it was every afternoon tropical. You know, it would rain in the middle of the day, pouring down rain, but be 90 degrees and humid. My hair was huge. I'm tasting these rums with these two handsome Cuban men in the back of this cafe and smoking their cigars. They're just like, just take a smoke of this, swish the air around in your mouth, now drink some of this rum, swish that around too. What do you think?
Oh my god.
We just got brought some more Ray's mistakes.
Amazing.
We're magical today.
It feels so weird to have service.
We're just that special, apparently. So amazing. So that was one of those moments, though, that I associate that with rum, too. Because rum comes from this, and you also opened a rum bar in Colombia, which is where my people are from.
Yes.
But it comes from these tropical wet places,
yeah.
You know, these sticky tropical wet places. So I agree, if you can make it feel like that moment. There are some rums, if I drink them and I can remember sitting in that cafe and smoking on some other dude's cigar, and I, no. Sorry, whoops. I just blew out the microphone on that one. Yeah, smoking a cigar and swishing around some rum, it's a happy moment. So when you're here, do you ever listen to salsa when you drink your rum?
You know, it's funny,
I don't listen to Cuban jazz when I listen to rum.
No, I don't. I think it's something that lives in my memory now, or when I go back to visit. But, here, I can't say that I have an obvious pairing for rum. One thing that I really enjoyed about Coconut Club, though, is very creative media pairings.
Yes! Oh my god, absolutely.
Our MC Darren, he was also our visual maestro.
I want some of those recordings.
He would make the craziest, like, combination of video and music, like, to go with our courses. And then there would be, you know, Dr. Doolittle that'll, like, meld into Hard Ticket to Hawaii, which would meld into...
Coconut Club it's a great supper club experience for those who haven't experienced it, with food and drink pairings, with entertainment, and the MC, Darren, there was video playing in the background. It'd be like Captain Ron or something, and clips from bad 80s movies starring all these top daytime soap opera people or something like that. It was just ridiculous,
so
but so fun. And then the music was this combo of kind of Hawaiian stuff, but also some yacht rock kind of stuff.
But then
Anything
Grace Jones.
Tropical.
But then you get Grace Jones, you know, David Bowie, China Girl. Amazing. I can't hear that song now and not think of Coconut Club.
And you know what I like about this, and so any Tiki people listening, any hardcore Tiki people, you're going to be offended when I say this. I think it's all in fun. It's because some Tiki purists, they only want to hear this kind of music. And you know what? That's wonderful. If you're at Trader Sam's, you're hearing the Exotica, and it's wonderful.
Right.
But you're at Coconut Club, which is a goofy, fun, irreverent night out.
Right.
So have fun with it. Throw all kinds of stuff in there, because it's about making you smile and laugh. More so than maybe transporting you to that exotic locale in 1943 or 1952 or whatever, you know. So I always have a blast when I go to Coconut Club.
Yeah, I think it just made me kind of appreciate the reverent departure. You know what I mean? Like, because
yes.
I come from a very like serious love of Tiki kind of a place.
Absolutely.
And
it's a place where you can love Tiki, but you can also let go and have a little fun.
Totally.
You know? Because you got to do that sometimes.
You kind of do. And to that end,
if you know what you're going for, there you go. So, okay, before we depart, thank you so much for being here, Nathan Hazard.
Thank you for having me.
We're naturals, we're both DJs, so we know how to talk. But I want you to tell me where people can find you and find out about your upcoming projects and such. What is the best way?
You know what? In all honesty, the best way is probably to follow me on Instagram. It's where I kind of post about everything I'm doing. And these days, even more in the story world. So follow me at Nathan Hazard. And that's just Hazard as in choking or fire. Not as in...
Or Hazard County.
Not as in county.
Oh, is that two Z's?
Two Z's.
Oh.
I'm one. Oh. H-A-Z-A-R-D.
So the regular Hazard.
Yeah, like a burn.
Yeah. Like a burn. Yeah, choking. Choking Hazard.
Choking.
Got it. And then, but there's also Drink Special.
There is. So follow us at Drink Special LA on Instagram. Coconut Club.
Just keep an eye out. There's a website for that, but those come and go. So Coconut Club is at the whim of its creators.
Yeah, we're on a creative, temporary, somewhat hiatus. We're recharging and regenerating
exactly.
For the future of Tiki.
Right? It's true. Tiki's going through transitions. So, and you guys are tropical anyway, so it's all fine. All right, and then maybe, I'm trying to think, I feel like I should ask you one more musical question.
Let's do it.
I don't know what it's going to be, though. What was your favorite record of 2017? Did you have one?
I don't think I did.
Oh, we talked about this. 2017 was not a great year for me for music.
It really wasn't for me either. And I'm trying to think.
All right. Well, then let's roll back and just find one of. Tell me one of your favorite records ever.
Oh, well.
We always have a bunch, so just pull
one
or two.
One of my favorite records ever. Okay. Saint Etienne, Fox Base Alpha.
Oh, that's a beautiful.
I just think it's a beautiful.
It's great all the
sound
way
collage with gorgeous pop moments. Very underappreciated that band. Let's see. Kind of. I don't know why I'm thinking of this after that. Maybe because it's another kind of sound collage. But OMD Dazzle Ships.
Oh my God!
It's one of my favorite albums.
That's my favorite OMD album.
It's the best one.
It's my favorite one.
It's so
special. And
that's special.
One that people are just like, that record's
weird. Oh, that
weird.
One's weird.
No, it's so good.
No.
It's so good. Radio Waves makes me so happy.
Oh my gosh.
Wait, George is not on that
is
one.
Is it Romance of the Telescope?
Yeah, just that record is so
good. It's just gorgeous.
It's so good. And you know, oh my God, what band totally loves it? This is not a surprise. I'm totally spacing out. They're weird. Liars.
Oh, cool.
Liars, which is a band
that's...
Yeah, and so Liars are like, oh, that was a formative record for us. I'm like, of course it was.
Yeah.
Because it's melodic and weird.
Yeah.
There you go. Dazzle Ships. Oh, see? I love you even more, Nathan.
Yeah.
Nobody brings that shit up.
No.
See? This is why we're friends. So maybe on that note, we'll say goodbye. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mo.
Let's enjoy these rays.
Well, that was fun, wasn't it? Thanks to Nathan Hazard so much for hanging out with me at the Tiki Tea in Silver Lake, California, smack dab in Los Angeles, so that we could yell at each other over tables and drinks and talk about all kinds of fun stuff. I'm so grateful you listened. And make sure that you go follow him on Instagram. That is Nathan Hazard with one Z, so that you can be up to date on what kind of comings and goings are happening in the pop-up scene in Los Angeles. He is really on top of the latest and the greatest cocktails if you are in this part of the world. And if not, you can find him in Panama City and Bogota, Colombia sometimes as well. So thanks so much, Nathan. That was a great time. And if you head on over to the Facebook page, you'll find the Spotify playlist that goes along with this lovely podcast. And now look at what I've got. I'm covered with tears as not. I had a joint of vision attack. And now all I wear is black. Up in my heart, you kept your shot. And now you left me on my blood. Ooh, now I feel like Morrissey. Band-aids on my nipples, cause I feel like Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you in part by The Blind Rabbit, a speakeasy located in the Anaheim Packing District. The Blind Rabbit has twice been given Best Mixology Awards by the OC Register, as well as several nominations for their innovative cocktail program. For more info and to make reservations, go to theblindrabbit.com. Thanks for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guests and our Spotify playlist, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.